What's up, everybody? My name is Mark Burek, and you're listening to or watching Better at Beach. Today, we have a really cool guest, buddy of mine, awesome coach, awesome player. It comes from all the fields in volleyball, where he came from indoor, went to beach, became a pro player, is a coach, is also a certified referee. So we get to answer and ask a few of the questions that we can attack at different angles. So I'm excited to talk to JM. He's also one of our camp coaches, which is pretty sweet. But I do want to give you guys a few announcements for what's going on coming up. April 6th to April 12th, all ages with day passes available in St. Pete Beach, Florida. We have our 6-day camp in St. Pete Beach. Remember, if you looked before and there were no day passes available, look again, because now we have opened up the day passes. April 7th, I will be remaining here in California. So Brandon, JM, all our other guys, they're going to be out in Florida. April 7th, I'm going to be here in California running a beach volleyball fundamentals. It is for all levels, but if you're getting introduced to the game, this is a great way to start. And that's April 7th, Sunday in Hermosa Beach. April 19th through 21st in Asheville, North Carolina, we have a 3-day men's and women's mini camp. May 5th, I just want you guys to keep that date open for a special announcement coming soon. May 31st to June 2nd, New York, Long Beach, Long Island in New York. We have a massive camp. So far, we're over 40. So we're going to bring a whole team of coaches, AVP players, national team coaches, all the way up to New York, my hometown in Long Beach, New York. So I'm really excited for that. And June 14th to 16th, we have Virginia Beach, a 3-day camp at the same time. June 14th to 16th, we're also running in San Diego, California. So lots of camps on the list this summer. And if you haven't been paying attention or hearing from us, remember that we have our coaching certification live. So we have the Complete Coach Academy and the Elite Coach Academy. So if you want to study coaching and learn from us, one meeting a week, plus our entire coaching library with manuals, practice plans, and season designs, go ahead and check out betteratbeach.com/coach or click around this video. And as always, of course, for our players out there who want to get their video analyzed and learn the game, go to betteratbeach.com/coaching. Coaching for players and coach for coaches. Without further ado, what's up, Jam?
How's it going, man? Happy to be here. Glad to be a part of the pod.
Part of the pod. We got to get you on. I think people like controversy, and I like that you're never afraid to stir it up. So I want to start with something controversial.
All right, bring it.
Florida or California for volleyball?
Man, that's a really tough question. I think you got to ask, I think whenever you ask that question, you got to ask, what are you looking for?
Okay.
So are you looking for a certain type of weather? Are you looking for a certain competition level? Are you looking for a certain lifestyle? Obviously, you know, the Florida lifestyle and the California lifestyle are so different.
Yeah.
You've been in both. What do you think? Like,
man,
lifestyle.
I'm honestly down for snowbirding. It's become more possible for people to have jobs. And anyway, like, if you're a pro volleyball player, you're figuring it out with entrepreneur stitching together a bunch of different jobs and responsibilities anyway. And your best way, I'd say, to be on tour is to have something that allows you to be mobile, so that you can do some of that work while you're on planes, while you're in other countries and cities. So I would definitely vote for Florida in the winter and California in the summer. But as far as expenses, yeah, I would be in Florida. Expenses, I would be in Florida, but pool of players, like, you can't match the pool of players that we have out here, even though a ton of people, I think, are moving to Florida, and now there's a good strong pocket there.
I think that's kind of what Allie and I looked at when we moved from Hermosa Beach to Florida, was what is the competition level here. In our opinion, the competition in California is the best. from like 5-year-old kids all the way to like Hav and Dodd still playing volleyball, still playing fours like on 21st Street in Hermosa Beach. So just the depth of good players is so deep in California, whether it's beach or indoor, and I'm sure you'd probably agree with that. Some of the top indoor programs for men's and women's are in California as well for College Beach, and then men's indoor and women's indoor as well. So we got a ton of exposure, like learning a ton from like the deep like wealth of knowledge that is volleyball in the area. Like Manhattan Beach is like the home of beach volleyball. It says it on the trash cans there, which I think is like so cool. And it's like so it's so cooked into the culture there. It really is like the volleyball sort of utopia. Now, like you said, it's expensive, it's extremely competitive, it's really hard to break into. And so dealing with all of those things, like you said, like being your own entrepreneur, that was definitely the hardest thing for me while in California. But again, it's that competition level that makes California volleyball so good. Now, do I think that there's really good volleyball in Florida and other small pockets in the US? 1,000%. It's just not going to be as deep, in my opinion. Kind of looking into that and like seeing both sides, we've been in California, been in Florida. To us, we think it's the accessibility to courts is the biggest difference between California and really all those other small pockets. So we're in St. Pete now. There might be like five, six, seven areas that have courts in the in within an hour. And that's a total of like maybe 50 nets. California, from First Street Hermosa to like 34th Street, how many courts? At least a court per street.
I'll say 40 in that one town, right?
At
It was just
least
in Hermosa.
40,
And then if
and
you
that's a
push down to
mile.
Porto, you might have another 60.
At least, because Manhattan Beach all the way up to where LMU practice, in Playa del Rey, there's another, I mean, there's courts all the way down the beach, so. If you're looking for that like recreational thing to do, if you're like looking to hang out with friends, like I said, the culture, like volleyball is so accessible in California. So that's why we think the level just gets higher, faster, just because there's so many courts availability and there's just not that many courts available here. I mean, you have a spot in St. Pete, right? And you had to build a court in your backyard to get exclusivity to courts, right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, like we talked about it. I wanted you to run some of our programs like Better at Beach. Hey, how do we bring Better at Beach to Florida? But then you brought up so many good points. You go, yeah, but we don't have space. So like, what would you offer, to me that I can't already get and that I have to squeeze out of the courts here? So until there's a facility or a zone built, a public zone built bigger down in Florida, that becomes tough. There's not too much for us to really offer there. And then that's what we did. Yeah. So we built that Airbnb to have a volleyball court so that if people do, and people do travel to St. Pete, they
Totally.
drive down there from hours away to play on some of those courts, but a lot of times they're not available. And with Jenna, like Volleyball Paradise, with her company growing, Samuels is now doing some nonprofit, and Nate Yang has got another court in his yard, so that's pretty cool. But it's when you're squeezing so much into that, it's really tough to build a community. I mean, it's odd even in California because there's not a community when you have all of these courts spread out. But then you go to a place like Salt Lake City, right? Or Grandstands in Cincinnati. And you've got 10 courts in one spot, like within a, half of a football field. And you go, ah, this is where all of the volleyball players are, so they can build off of each other. And there's little tiny cliques within it, but
Sure.
you've got that community.
Yeah, that's a tough part in California too, which a lot of people would in my experience at least, I saw that there are cliques, there are little bubbles of players. So even though there are hundreds of courts, it might be hard to break into a group depending on your level, depending on who you know, like how easy it is for you to like make new friends. I know that was really tough for me coming from Florida, like chip on my shoulder, like, I want to train with the best guys, and those best guys are already set up. They're already practicing with USA team. They're already playing with the top AVP pros. It's like, how do I kind of claw through that and find the right guys and find the right situation? And but that's what makes it so competitive, and you're right there next to like the best players, and I think that's like such an awesome resource. But on the other side, here in Florida, the community is just so much better. I guess it's just easier to break into the community because it's small, like you said, like everybody's in it together. Like I think when Florida teams travel, they're always cheering for other Florida teams for the most part. But again, there are some players that like butt heads and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a really interesting like community culture piece for sure. Like you said, smaller community, like definitely tighter, but California is so big, there's millions of pockets.
How did you break in and finally start, because it's not like you came out of nowhere, right? You were fan favorite on the NVL. You were pushing AVP and then a couple of years broke through AVP. How did you get into practices with better players, and what would you recommend for somebody who's like B, A, or just starting, but they know they're hungry enough to where they want to improve? They just haven't found the players or haven't gotten the accepted invite with those players yet. Like, what are the lessons that you learned, and can they even be translated into like an amateur player?
Oh, I think 100% they could be translated. I think the biggest thing is the mindset. So if I show up to a practice, and when I first moved to Hermosa, this was like 4 or 5 years ago. I like you said, like I already knew some of the guys and they were willing to like let me hop into practices. But my attitude was not like at the same kind of they my mindset wasn't the same as theirs. Like I was more like chip on my shoulder. I really wanted to beat whoever I played in practice. And sometimes that can like push people away from you and make it like less likely for them to want to practice with you again. Because people want to
Interesting.
practice with people that they like. They don't want to show up and be like, oh, this guy shows up late. Oh, this guy's such a headache to practice with. This guy just comes out and rips jump serves and never gets them in, so we don't actually get any plays in. So, like having the mindset of like being adaptable, being friendly, like being nice, like just being personable, that will get you into more practices faster than just like being the best player. And I think that kind of goes into like players that we coach as well. That's a piece of coachability. If you are open, if you can have a conversation about something and not completely lose your lid, I think it's really easy to work with that person. It's really easy to see that person grow.
It kind of sucks, right? To be at the highest level of the country where you're supposed to be the most competitive, and you figure I can let myself be whoever I want, put my head down and go to work, like absolutely go to work. But we're so dependent on being able to train with and against our enemies that you have to have, well, you don't have to have, this isn't automatic, but there's some piece of it where you have to be social enough, friendly enough, not, what's the word for it? Like, not creating chaos at a practice just because you're tough on yourself, or where everybody looks at you like, Jesus, I don't want to be around this type of attitude.
And you really have to PR yourself. You can't come in like all ragtag with your boombox on. I'm playing my music. You might they might not want to see you ever again. So, fit in a little bit, and then once you fit in, you're in the group, then you can be a little bit more yourself, I think, as far as like, maybe shifting the sand or making waves, like you're saying. And I think I learned a lot of that from US, like kind of when I broke in practicing with Travis Muter. He was really professional in the fact that he was really on time with scheduling practices, always on time, always warm when he got to the courts. It was really hard to complain about something that Travis was doing. He was usually the first one there. He's usually hitting his shots, like full warm up, everything, sometimes even already doing sprints. Like, that's a player you want to show up to.
Yeah, the guys that are warming up before you're there. I mean, so you coach, I coach. You talk to kids about being a practice player, being a good athlete, and you hope it translates into an adult. But when somebody is already warming up or fixing the court before you're there, that counts. It already counts. I think of Joe Lambert in Salt Lake City. Like he was there 20 minutes before any player, any coach, making sure the net heights are right, like raking the court. And you go, I'm going to invite this guy anywhere, any day, anytime, you know, no matter the sport, just because he likes it. And the guys who think that they're done with that sort of attitude or habit when they're not a junior anymore, or when they're like not a freshman or a sophomore in college anymore, you realize all of a sudden, yo, this comes back into play immediately. If you're showing up unprepared or late, or you're not doing stuff that impresses people, you're not earning the invite back to practice.
And in turn, you're not getting the opportunity to get better. So, like, if you show up late, if you whatever, you're just going to be missing out on that growth. So, it's like, it's not if you showed up on time, if you showed up late, whatever, like, you're going to get out of it what you put in. And so, I think, like you said, it's a really good example of that. As much as you want to put into it is what you're going to get back out for sure.
I think like towards when I started being done, I was just so gassed from doing better at beach stuff that I was like, I knew I used to be the guy that showed up a half hour before and get it done. But looking at financials, looking at the future of my family, I was like, I'm gonna work until the minute I have to leave my house and then get onto that court. And I did that, I think maybe 3 or 4 times in a month. And I go, oh man. Playing's not my priority anymore. And it wasn't even like I didn't make the mental decision. I came to the conclusion because of my actions. You know, and it was so different than I had acted my entire life where I water break. No, I'm jump serving. Like practice is done. Okay, leave the balls out. You know, I'm gonna go pass 500 balls. And I
So it's
see
like,
it.
how do you make the change? So like, how do you make it a priority if you still want it to be a priority? So it kind of like slipped away as a priority without you realizing it. So maybe it's like, all right, I realize it now. Let's make it a priority. I'm gonna try to get there 5 minutes early. Can I spare 5 minutes? And a lot, and to me, I hadn't even heard that. Like that, I think that's just like a big piece in professionalism. Just, being more prepared. And that nobody had ever brought that up to me. And so I didn't realize all of that until later on, I think. And so like I said, if you're just starting out, like try to be that guy and you're gonna get invited back a lot more. I don't think the level really matters. Because I've seen players and you and I have seen players, I'm sure they're like, how's that person in that practice? Like they're not the same level. But maybe that person coordinated all three of the guys and they got a coach. And they picked the time and they dropped the lines, put up antenna, got the net height, raked it out, and the other three guys got to show up and practice. Like that's you like paying to play with these players. You're paying your time and like that's how you get the good looks. So I think like there's something to like having your own court where like Mesko, for example, down on 34th, he keeps it really nice and groomed. When you practice with Mesko, like you know what you're getting. So, like creating that like little reputation can kind of give you that small edge on whether someone invites you to a practice or doesn't invite you to a practice. I think like no matter what area you're in, California, Florida, middle of Missouri, whatever.
All right. And then there's two ends of that, you know, and I do think of those players that number one, probably invited themselves or asked and received 100 no's to every one yes and didn't stop, didn't get, you know, sassy pants about it. They're just like, okay, cool, done. And then the players that said yes 100% of the time, where you're like stuck and you go, hey, I know this dude. How many times have you heard that line? I know this dude's always down to play.
He's
We
always
need
available. Yeah.
him.
Yeah.
Well, Two ways. Not easy for everybody. You got parents, you got family, you got jobs, and you're just like,
Totally. And you know, some people, they'll leave 100 messages and get 100 no's, and it'd be really hard. They not brush it off. It's not easy. But
Right. Yeah.
it's just like how really badly do you want to grow? And I think you'll find your answer, I think.
Yeah, right. Is it a priority? Like, is volleyball your priority? If it is, then you're going to find yourself saying yes more frequently. If you want to make it your priority, it's say yes, then figure it out.
Yeah, and I think that's harder in California because it's easier to say yes when the weather is nice. And the weather in California for a season gets quite cold for training beach volleyball. So I think it becomes easier to like prioritize something else in like an off season while it's cooler out. If you don't want it to be priority, you've got other stuff going on. And then come whatever, April 1st, March 1st, February 1st, whatever your start date is, you're like, all right, now I'm switching the gauge to this is way more priority. I'm going full in. A couple things are going to now take a back seat. So kind of finding that balance here in Florida has been tough because it's like, it's nice out. Let's train 3 days a week. It's like, okay, how about it's nice out. We're going to go one day a week. Enjoy yourself. Like, do something else, take care of yourself. Kind of finding that balance. I've been working with some of the pros that I coach here in town. I don't think I mentioned that. I know you asked like before we got on the interview, like what kind of coaching I'm doing. But here in St. Pete, I've got two pro groups. I have a AVP World Tour aspiring group
Nice.
with some awesome players, like some awesome athletes. We've been working together since beginning of February, so we're on like week 8 or 9 with them. And then I have an open group, and these are ladies that are trying to basically like win their first open.
Oh, cool.
So that's kind of like
That's a good sales page right there. Trying to
so
win your first.
somewhat of a graduation. Yeah, I mean, and we're really clear about our goals. We're like, hey, like this is what it's going to take to side out against the teams that you're going to have to be playing in the open finals. And so I love having that as a goal, and I love for my AVP players to have their own separate goals, and like everybody knows what they're working towards, and I think that's a really cool situation to be a part of. I'm really grateful that the girls are like handing me their preseason and saying, "Hey, coach me, like let's make this happen." So it's been an awesome experience getting to work with these girls. So
Now,
really cool.
is that a situation where like anyone from Massachusetts, Minnesota, Virginia, where they could just fly down and maybe get into one of your trainings? Is there a way for somebody to just pop in on you and get
Yeah,
in, or
so
do you
we've
have
done
to?
that before. Basically what I'll do is I'll kind of vet them to make sure it's not completely over their head because it is a pretty high level group. And I don't want to provide I don't want to say worser product, but a different product to the open girls that are already in practice. So yeah, I'll usually do some sort of like digging to see kind of their history, who they've played with, stuff like that. I'll usually meet with them and say like, hey, this is a good idea or this isn't a good idea right now. But currently I have the AVP group and the open group down the line. If there's enough space, like we talked about court space, I'm trying to go to the double A level, which would be girls trying to win their first double A and compete and get some of their first open wins.
What's the Okay, so first, if somebody is trying to get in there and they are trying to get in for a session or two, could they just Instagram you, or how would they get in touch?
Yep, they could absolutely just DM me or text me. I'm at Jammin' JM Plumber on Instagram if you don't already follow me. But yeah, actually a lot of my contacts are just through direct messages like, hey JM, I'll be in town for 2 weeks. Like, what is this looking like? And I can give my best recommendation if it's not with me, with someone else in town as well. Because like you said, there are other groups that have other levels. I just am currently dealing with more open players. But there are a lot of programs in town that work with pretty much all levels.
Nice.
Yeah. So
So that takes me
I can be
down.
the resource for them. If they need help, I can just send a message. I'll help you out.
That leads me down like two questions of, or two lines of questions. One, how do you say no? How do coaches or players who are at another level say no to somebody who's just below their level without completely rejecting them, destroying them, or letting them know? Do you have any tips for coaches who are trying to run higher level trainings in their area but don't want to?
So when I,
like you say, you
no, know? I totally understand. So when I started the open group, when we first moved here, I started the open group, which Allie was a part of. The only requirement was that you played open level tournaments. So if you had played an open level tournament in the last like 6 to 12 months, or if I already knew you, you were good to be in the open group. Okay. Then I was reached out to by Eunice Vercosa and Sarah Schermerhorn Murphy. And so then that's when we started kind of a branch off more AVP World Tour group. And similar thing, it's that one's definitely tougher because they're both open level, but one is more World Tour AVP focused. One is more local. Hey, I want to play a couple qualifiers maybe this year focused. So I think when I sit down and talk to them about what their actual goals are, I think the groups start to align more properly. Now, if someone's like, I really want to win my first Open, then that would be okay. That would be more appropriate for the Open group. I think I kind of keep it like at a qualifier kind of level. It's like, if you've won an Open, you've more or less graduated to being able to have it have like an opportunity to be a part of the pro group. So it is kind of a newer product. We're kind of working through it. Obviously a lot of personalities to work with adults and high level players, but, trying to do my best to juggle all of it. But like I said, I think when you start to understand like what people's goals are, and where they're currently at, it usually makes a little bit clearer picture for me as a coach and usually for them as a player.
Mm. Yeah. that goal setting, where are you at, where you want to be, where are we going, I think is such a massive conversation for you not to have personally with players, mm-hmm. but publicly in front of the other players. Just because for me in my career, like somebody's version of working hard didn't look the same way mine did. And I was so unforgiving of that. You know, if you weren't laid out and sandy within 6 minutes of being near a volleyball court or in pain physically, and I could see it, I was like, unforgiving. Like, you're not working hard enough.
You're not trying hard enough. Yeah.
But then I never once stopped to say like, hey, why are you here? Hey, you know, what goals are you at? What are you chasing? And some of the best trainings I had were definitely with the ECM crew, like Shane Donahue, mm-hmm. Chris Frazier, Eric Zahn, Dentler, Joiner of course, and mm-hmm. Sebi. But we all knew we are so tired of getting our asses kicked in qualifiers.
Yeah. Like,
we're winning the open tournaments, no problem, except we're facing each other with 30 minutes yep. left and no sunlight.
Yeah.
But as soon as we show up to a quali, we're just getting rocked, you know, in that mm-hmm. last match. And so we all had that exact same goal. And we traveled 3 and 4 hours to sleep 2 or 3 nights and have 6-hour training days against each other. So that was a great group to be a part of, because it was, even though we were battling against each other, it was valuable to us. And we all had the same goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you guys would qualify for my pro group. You guys have won opens, right? And you're like basically trying to take that next step. So, My kind of next goal for the girls is to get more men's players at the practice, because I like the challenge level. So I'm really big right now on like trying to dial the challenge level appropriately. So that's why I like, like I said, asking what your goals are, where are you at right now, what's the most appropriate challenge level? Because if you're just getting stomped on by open teams, mm-hmm. like we need to find some common ground and figure it out at the AA level. Okay. Now it's like, okay, I'm getting stomped at the qualifiers. What do I need to do to get to that next level? And so for, I would say historically, a lot of top women's teams have trained against men's players, and it's usually easier to find like a 6-foot guy that has decent skills than a 6-foot girl that has decent skills. So just the accessibility makes that a lot easier for more competitive training, in my opinion.
Oh, that's an interesting point. So the accessibility, like at the adult level,
mm-hmm.
to find players who are athletic, still competing, and want to hit. And then, a double A guy is quite normally going to jump significantly higher than a World Tour woman, right? So,
Or at least like the same, because honestly, these girls are disgusting right now. Like, I've hopped in. I'm like, oh, I gotta take a way bigger jump than that. Like, so, and I think that is so awesome, and I love that. Like, everything's really competitive, and I think that helps bring the competitiveness, like you're saying.
I've always thought of, everyone thinks of bringing guys in. Like my college club coach, oh no, my college varsity coach, she brought me in to train against her girls, but she was like, nope, you go full out. Like I wasn't good enough, but I was athletic.
Sure.
And she was just like, no, play as hard as you want. And then I remember she reamed out her starting setter because during the practice, she didn't set me 10 out of 10 times. And she was like, you don't know how to win. You have somebody that touches 6 inches higher than everybody here, and you're not setting him. And she's like, I didn't think it would be right to set the dude the entire time.
Yeah, but so that's why I have the conversation. So for like some levels that might not be appropriate, but for the pro group, I asked the girls, I said, hey, would you pref and a lot of them have played against men's players before. I said, hey, like would you prefer to play against men more often? And the feedback has been, yeah, I'd like that. Like I would like to play against guys players. It just gives a different perspective as well. And now that I'm into like more environmental training, like figuring out why teams win, why teams lose, and a lot of it's the environment. So if I can put a big 6 foot whatever guy, I know sexy Chad's probably going to be hopping into practice here soon too. If I can get an Alex Kleinman sized guy at my girls practice, now my girls are competing against physicality wise an Olympic gold medalist.
Do you put
And I know
any?
it's going on in California as well. I know that a lot of our USA girls teams are training against men's open players.
Do you put restrictions on the guys? I mean, so at Mason, when the guys practice against the girls, coach said, hit at max velocity, but jump at 50%. So that it was like kind of even, but they're hitting harder. Like if you're hitting so that your chest is over their hands, it seems to be a little bit absurd. But do you place any limitations on guys if you think that they're going to like mash the women's, or do you just kind of let them go? I mean, obviously it's level dependent. If somebody's trying their hardest and the level is fine, then yeah.
Exactly. And I think like we do have really high level girls. So like you said, if I find an A level guy, he might not be high level enough. He might get smoked. If I bring in an open guy, but maybe he's just physicality and he doesn't understand the skills, I might say, hey, you're not allowed to take a full jump. Other than that, like play volleyball. Try to win the games is what I tell him.
Oh, full block.
Yeah, I just say no max jumps,
Okay.
you can jump, but just don't give it the full blown, like I'm trying to block Dahlhauser jump.
Gotcha.
So
Yeah. But
I think a lot of guys, when they start playing with girls, they understand the height required to win. So they kind of like get that gauge figured out. And once they kind of get that gauge figured out, it makes it awesome. I think a really good example of that is Brooke Sweat. She always trained against her husband and her husband's brother, who are like two 5 foot 8 like open players. They're smaller guys, but they're excellent players, and they're like more the height of defenders you'd see like on the World Tour. They're 5'8". So she got so much experience against playing those two guys that she had already, been there, done that before she went to World Tour. So.
Are you facing any pushback? So this is a little bit turning into the coach discussion of like, all right, do I invite the guys to my indoor practice? Do I invite the guys to my girls' practice where you know that you have access to so many guys that would want to do that? Now, how do you fight or combat the attitude, or are you even experience it when the women are going, well, that just wouldn't happen? And so then they shut off a piece of their competitiveness instead of figuring it out in worst possible environment. Like, do you deal with that at all, or have you had enough primary or initial discussions that say, like, this is what we're doing. I'm not going to let them hold back, or I'm not going to have them hold back. You have to win.
I think that's where the level of men's player matters more. I think, like, the higher level they are, the more they understand how to gauge sort of maybe their intensity. But again, it's like, I think if you create a culture around growth, if you create a culture around, like, you're going to be playing teams that are this physical, it becomes an easier conversation with them, like, moving forward, I guess. So it's like, okay, I have 6'5" guy here. He's going to be jumping as high as Alex Kleinman. So the physicality is somewhat matched. So who's to say one's better at volleyball or not? So I'm really just getting a more physical player. I'm not necessarily getting a more skilled player. Mm-hmm. But just that physicality is so important in beach volleyball and just volleyball. And the strongest players are usually amongst the top.
Yeah. Well,
so
yeah,
kind of that understanding, sports, right? That understanding goes a long way of, like, hey, XYZ player is here to, like, help us get better. He's here to help out. So, like, he's going to try to win and you guys are going to try to beat him. And, you know, what happens, happens. Mm. You could have a girl that absolutely dominates everyone in a practice. And with Sarah Murphy, Shermahorn, she's like a 6'1" blocker. She touches 10 feet. She's nasty. Like, she needs a bigger player in front of her, which is why we try to recruit the tallest girls and stuff. to play. But yeah. She's like, yeah, like, she's playing, she's world tour, so she's playing against Taryn Kloth, who's 6'5". She's playing against Alex Kleinman. She's playing against Brandy Wilkerson. So a lot of these women's players have the same physical capabilities as a lot of AA guys.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So like I said, it just matters your challenge level. Just find the right gauge. And make sure everybody has, like, a common understanding has, like, been my best experience for sure.
Cool. What do you, if we're talking about the difference, so you've got a group that you're trying to develop, which is Win AA, and you've got the group that you have, which is Win Open. What's the difference between somebody who can win a double A and somebody who can win an open? Are there certain skills that you know have to be upgraded? Is it all around? Is it a percentage of one stat?
I mean, if I spoke from experience, I won my first AA when I was, like, I want to say I won my first AA when I was in college. So I had already been playing beach and indoor starting at the age of 15. And I won a B in Florida. I won a double B in Florida. I won an A when I was, like, 15 or 16. And then I think, like, to break into the next level, I needed a little bit more either skill or physicality. So I think as I got older and played more indoor volleyball, I got a little bit more physical. I learned how to take those big swings against teams. So I was kind of that player at the AA level that jumped as high as he could and tried to hit every single ball. And I was a bump setter. Like, every other skill was pretty basic. But I made sure I, like, could jump really high and hit really hard. That got me through double A. And then I think I won my first triple A with, like, an old veteran. I think playing with a veteran as a younger player goes such a long way. You can learn, I mean, you can learn a lot of bad things, but you can also learn a lot of good things as far as professionalism in the way of, like, when should we show up to play? When should we start warming up? What kind of lunch should we be having? So you're learning kind of, like, those little things, like, towards being a more, like, elite or professional athlete. But really from there, it's just kind of a steady climb of, like, what new skills can I learn and how much more physical can I get? I don't know. Could you speak to that maybe a little bit?
Physicality? So I'll share this. There's one drill that I do where I put myself as the coach and competitor mm-hmm. against this team, and I'm on one half of the court mm-hmm. and I serve full time.
Okay.
I have to serve them, and I go lights out as hard as I want when I'm serving them. Of course, if I'm mashing a B team, all right, I'll try to let them pass and set a couple times, but they have to beat me in that half of the court. And in, I think, 4 years, I played this against a lot of teams, like one on two. So they have to beat me one half of the court. And then after that, I only have one touch. So it's basically me chucking over free balls.
Okay.
There were two teams that beat me.
Okay.
One open men's team from Canada, super physical, just like you're saying. And then a 15-year-old girl and her 16-year-old girl partner.
Okay.
Lit me up. But
girls that?
Yep.
Yeah.
But understood the game.
Yeah.
The guys beat me the way that guys would normally beat you. Physical. Sure. Mashed things. Did they have to? No. The way that the girls beat me was they just hit spots. They hit around me. They messed with me short, deep, and then they prepared for the next ball. Like as soon as they hit, they understood, oh, he's coming over on one. So as soon as I set or as soon as I hit, I need to cover this and then just keep surviving and never make an error. So I just think that there's two ways to win beyond A or beyond double A. And one of them, which I didn't realize before this conversation, was, yeah, be physical, be the athletic freak. And that'll override a lot of skill. And when people talk about like the difference between men's and women's sport, they talk about like women's lacrosse versus men's lacrosse. Like men's lacrosse is just people beating each other and hammering each other. And like, could a female survive in that? No. But then they also talk about like the skill and what's required to pass and make those looks and like the artistry behind that. And if you take a look at the ways to win, the people who are physical and have that artistry are the ones who are unstoppable, right? You've got the control and the knowledge game. And so the young girls that beat me in that played the smarter game and the guys played a mash me game. But no one else could figure it out because if you're hitting at the double A level at an AVP defender and you keep trying to overpower him, he's seen way faster than that. So I'm spotting free balls everywhere. You know, and then you don't have the control to actually like make me run or just the knowledge to say, ah, he can't attack us forever and he has to come over on one. So we're just going to feed him some difficult free balls, reset, and then get better swings. So it was just so impressive to me to see that some of the first athletes to figure out how to win were these two junior girls. And I was like, the rest of my generation, like the 30-year-olds at the time, I go, you guys are screwed in the AVP. It was that day that I said that like all of my 30-year-old friends who were in the qualifiers and in the like 7th through 13th spot in the AVP, I go, you're going to be toast. Because these were AVP teams that I was beating with the same drill. And it was the young girls that figured it out. And I was like, uh-oh, here we go.
Ball control.
So combo. I think you, like you said, you can do it with both, right? You can do it by just being more physical and bumping up those skills, learning how to hit harder and in, or you can have supreme vision and ball control.
Or you can do some combination of both. But I will say that I think a lot of open players that can win an open, like you're saying, they're at least like a two-trick pony, if that makes sense. So maybe they their side out is really strong. Like they can hit the ball really hard every time. So as long as there's not like a strong read blocker in front of them, they're going to be able to like hit hard for points. And then maybe their other trick is that they bomb jump serves. So those are two really good skills that could win you an open tournament. I think when it comes to qualifying in the AVP and winning in the AVP level, you have to add a couple more tricks. It's got to be stellar defense, stellar set out, stellar passing, stellar setting, stellar blocking, and or team defense. So if you can be that 6'8" blocker that can pass, set, and side out on the first ball, you have a really good chance of qualifying in the AVP. So it's like, it's not just having that one tool can get you to win an open. It's like, how do I find other tools? And I think that's been a big piece of me growing as a player is like, how can I provide more to my team? So I think in the last when I played with Travis, I think the biggest thing I could provide was somewhat of a team defense strategy. So he was blocker, I was defender. He was an excellent server, physical blocker, sided out money, awesome setter. So I was like, all right, what am I going to bring to the table? And I was a little bit more on the defense landscape. So I was like, how can I provide value here? So I really like put a lot of focus into that. Now I'm really comfortable like teaching or training like my blockers that I want to play with, because I got that whole season of experience kind of adding that tool. So this year, who knows what the next tool is going to be exactly, but there's a couple things in the mix for sure.
What was the difference for you? So going from NVL, which at a time was the top tour, then it became like the B plus to the AVP tour. But what was the difference that helped you break through finally into the main draws? Was it just the partner that you were finally able to land, like that quality of partner? Was it an upgrade in your defense or your offense, or was it just being here, out in California and being present with everybody and seeing that level? Like, what do you think it attributes to? What do you attribute to?
I think it comes down to like I made a good impression on Travis. So and he and I, that was the I mean I played with Dave Palm before. If for those of you who don't know who Dave Palm is, he's like an elite top level player from South Florida. And he's a bit of a hermit. He doesn't come around too often. He's always got long sleeves, long everything on. He's an insane player, awesome ball control, really well trained, extremely physical. So playing with him was super easy. He had a lot of the tools. So he was carrying our team. He was getting the stuff blocks. He was setting perfect. I got served every ball. He was bombing aces. Like those were the skills necessary and needed for like us to qualify for the first time. And he was definitely like carrying the load, to be nice, I guess. So he was kind of carrying the load, but I think when it was more of a team effort with me and Travis, we both brought different things, to the table. And I think the biggest thing that I had to break through was learning how to hit against bigger blocks. The level of blocking is so different at the next level. And I think like you were saying, like your defense, when you played the half court game against those teams, and they're hitting the ball hard into the angle, you're like, this is easy. Well, for some blockers, if they get in front of you, they're like, this is easy. Like every time I'm hitting against Logan, he's like, yeah, this is easy. So like learning how to like manage like more of a read block and tooling the block. And I brought my arm swing up way higher. But it took a lot of like losing, watching film, what do I gotta do different? Working with Travis, like, what do I gotta do? And it finally just came to the point like, hey, try to tool the blocker every single time and see what happens.
Okay. So
And I
you said
started
it was
scoring a lot. So I just learning that one skill kind of like unlocked it easier to play against bigger blocks, which is like the biggest thing. That was like my biggest roadblock, like playing at the next level. So once I kind of unlocked that and worked with that a lot better, which he made it super easy, he's an excellent setter. So it made
such
it
a good
really
setter.
easy to pick my spot when I hit. That really opened up the game for me, and we started to see more wins against teams that I had like ever beaten before. So
Now, was that a mentality shift or was it a technical shift? Because for me, a couple of times when I started just basically saying F you to whoever I was trying to block me and mentally just saying, I'm going to hit over you, even if I was literally 14 inches lower than them. I get an insane amount of kills when I play with that mentality. Maybe it does make me swing higher. So it might translate into like a physical technical manifest, right? But the mentality switch for me, and I had to have the same mentality indoor of never ever being afraid that I'm going to block, almost like relishing in the fact that they might block me and making them do it. But for you, was it a technical thing or was it a mental thing, or do you think a combo?
I think like you said, it was a combo. The technical piece of like, what do I got to do to get around these players? I don't know how it clicked or when it clicked or whatever, but when it did, that shifted my I would say strategy mindset. Like, how do I set up my attack now to like tool the block or to beat the block? I think before, when I was in Florida, there's only so many blockers you get to play against that are like able to actually block the ball. And the reason is, to my experience at least, is the sand is so shallow that it's really hard to block the ball. Unless you're an insanely physical blocker, the sand in Florida is so shallow that I was just so used to carving underneath people, shooting around, dropping it here or there, that I hadn't really experienced playing in the deeper sand against bigger guys. And so just kind of that big environment shift made me have to kind of like grow out of carving underneath people, because I tried it and they would still block me, or it would clip the tape and I'd get dug. I remember playing qualifier against Reed Pretty. I'd been like siding out all summer in the open tournaments. I like smashed my favorite honey dipper into the angle, and Reed Pretty's literally already standing there, just like perfect. I think McKibben like sets him outside and he just like bounces it, and I was like, F word. So like that right there was kind of like the start of like, oh man, like I don't even know. And that was so long ago. And then when I moved to California, it was like, how do I get around these guys? It was so frustrating. But again, it was like that one, I don't know what it was exactly. I think I was just tired of getting stuff blocked by Jeff Samuels, which he blocks me still a ton. He's got such good reach. He and I are about the same height, so like our jumps match the same, so he always has a good beat on me. So it was like, how do I beat Jeff? And it just came to basically like making sure I high pointed it and hit the ball. Like you said, just trying to make sure I went over the top every single time on these guys. And I think that technical changed my arm swing. It kind of changed my outlook and like mentality of like, all right, I know what to do now. I have a better idea of what to do.
What do you think? I mean, I know that one of your technical things is making sure the ball's over your right shoulder. Like I've heard that from you multiple times. It's not even over your right shoulder, almost outside your right shoulder instead of in front of your head, where you said you used to hit and be lower. But what other technical thing do you think changed you or changes most people for the better?
I think arm swing, when I'm looking at players and I'm trying to, I guess on a coaching side, or I referee is a lot, so I get to watch a lot of good volleyball, fortunately. I'll watch the players, and if they're successful, I usually look at their arm swing, and I as an attacker, and I say, all right, well, they have like what I feel is an optimal arm swing. Like they're gonna have a lot of success. And what's funny is the players with the really good arm swing aren't usually the best jumpers, and the players with really good jumps don't always have the best arm swing. I think I went the other way, which was like, I'm gonna jump as high as I can and hit the ball out in front of me over my head. But now it's like, all right, I'm jumping as high as I can and I'm getting it like way up over the top of my right shoulder. So I think the arm swing is like a really, really big piece, especially if you're struggling with offense.
Okay. And being able to, so were you told to hit over the front, over the, like the front middle of your head early
Nobody ever
on?
told me. I mean, I just grew up playing and you just figure it out, whatever you think makes the most sense. And so I think
Oh.
what correlated for me is I started watching more adults play when I was in high school. And I was like, man, these guys are so freakishly good, and they all jumped really high. It hadn't clicked to me that it was all these other things. I was like, man, they jump high, I've got to jump high. So that was always just my mentality, and I just like played with that forever until it didn't work anymore.
Okay. And then getting it out over your right, allowing it to be, do you now teach outside your right, above your right, or do you give them a obstacle course to figure it out on their own?
What I like to do is contrast training. So I'll have them hit a ball from like over here, have them hit a ball from way over here, and kind of alternate those two.
Okay.
And then a really good one that I'm doing right now is I'll have them hold a piece of sand. So I'll have them pick up some sand, and I have them throw that sand behind them, and then they have to come up over the top of the ball. So that helps create a nice wave over the top of the ball. It helps promote top spin as well. And usually by doing that, They're keeping the ball over their right shoulder.
So if somebody's listening and they need to follow your instructions for those
Sure.
podcasters who are there, how would your arm move? So if they're blind and you need to instruct them through where they're throwing the sand,
Totally.
how would that
So
work?
you've got a ball of sand in your hand. So you picked up some sand. You have the ball in your left hand. You're going to toss the ball up as if like you're serving. Okay. So you're tossing the ball up. The sand in your hand, you're going to throw behind you, but behind your hip. So you're just going to throw it straight backwards. And then you're going to try to come up and over the top of the ball as fast as you can.
Okay. So kind of like a almost a low hand release, not the one where your hand comes back high and up over your head. That's way more what I'm teaching with arm swings is pulling across either like at the chest line or below instead of the whole double arm lift and then retract.
It's a really dynamic swing, and so when players feel how dynamic your arm can be, I think they kind of find the most appropriate speed. Because, like you're saying, the low arm draw is allegedly supposed to be better for shoulder health, but we know Taylor Crabb, he's out and over here every time, so it's kind of a higher draw. So he would have a little bit, he'd have a little bit difference. But if you watch every single one of his attacks, the ball is right over his right shoulder, right here,
Yeah,
right
and
over
then
the
he's got
top.
some of
So,
those sick like release cut shots where the ball's a full foot outside of his right and he still just hits a nice little hand flick as a crossbody or a wrist away cut shot without even being at the top. And he's the awareness that he has on some of those shots is nice. But yeah, you can, I mean, now that I'm visualizing it, I can see him just do these like 90 degree arm position releases for his cut shots sometimes.
that's why it looks so smooth, because you get all this room out here. When you're here, it doesn't work. You kind of
Yeah.
have to kind of like poke at it like this. So it really makes a lot of sense to me, at least, to see players hit the ball like that. And I believe a lot of our best players, a lot of the best players in the world, have this style arm swing. And the players that don't have that style arm swing are usually extremely physical. They are really tall guys and really strong, and they're just whoosh, lever arming it hard and down
Yeah,
like that.
that big
So.
lat pull. Were you told growing up, shorten your arm swing, quicken your arm swing? I mean, this is something that I heard so frequently, like, you've got this big draw, you're wide open, you've got to shorten that, you've got to quicken that. Beach is a smaller arm swing. And I tried to bite into it for a little while. Technically, I really never did. The only thing that I did was I actually ended when I was hitting my best by having probably my widest opening, but my quickest release to the ball. So just like making sure that I opened my squeeze in my shoulder blades, but then when I came through on it, having the ability to accelerate shots instead of from that back position going like almost when you load for to punch somebody, if you then start forward in slow motion, somebody's going to avoid that. And I think that's why I got dug so much early in qualifiers was like when I saw a shot open, I was like, oh, okay, it's open. So now I can relax into it instead of it's open. I have less than a hundredth of a second to get it there. Like, go now.
Yeah, playing around with that speed is something I like to do with my pros. So I'll do a drill where they approach really hard and then they swing really soft. And then the next one is they approach very soft, but they actually come through extremely fast. So they get to feel some of the contrast there. But I will say that in most experience, I mean, the faster you can get the ball to the ground, usually the more advantageous.
It's just about so much more than seeing the open spot and hitting the correct spot. It's like there is a window of time right now, and if you don't get it there as fast as humanly possible, they're gonna scoop it or they're gonna have a better chance of scooping.
And that's the chess game that you play at a higher level, and maybe that spot's open and you hit it a certain percentage and it falls for a kill, and that shot will score based on the level of player you're playing against.
Yeah, that
So I
was the
think I
biggest
got
game
into that a
that
little
opened
bit in
that up.
Florida, where I'm like, I got used to scoring a certain way, and then Surprise, that's getting locked down by a 6-foot-9 guy. So, just being aware of the environment and doing your best to try to combat it, I think has gone a long way for me. And so I think if people keep that in mind, they'll usually come out on top.
You talk about contrast training for all the coaches who are out there and all the players who have to coach themselves or figure things out for themselves. What is contrast training and how are you applying it? What are the benefits of it? And can you give just one more example of it? Because you already gave a slow approach to fast arm swing and then fast approach to slow arm swing, getting them to feel both ends. But why do you want them to feel both ends? What's contrast? Could you just go through a 5-minute explanation or a 2-minute explanation of that?
Oh, sorry.
You lost me for
Okay.
a second, but now you're back. So start
Sorry.
with that and then
So,
I'll
John
fill in the
explained to
end.
me contrast training. That's where I learned more about contrast training. That's where he really taught me how to implement it more. And I think the basic motive is in our mind, we have an idea of what a skill feels like or looks like. So let's say, for example, I have a player that came from indoor. So they have really fast, quote unquote, hands. Okay. In their mind, when they try to slow it down, it's still not as slow as maybe we think, right? Have you ever seen it? They're like, go slower. And they kind of do the same thing. And they're like, that was slower, right? You're like, it was only a little bit slower. So instead, this time we're gonna take the volleyball, we're gonna pretend it's a bowling ball. So we're gonna grab the ball, it's super duper heavy, and then we're gonna like throw it back to our partner. So that would be like ultimately the absolute slowest you could set a ball, like, and it would actually probably be illegal. So one contrast would be bowling ball, which is a really good one that John liked to use. And then if we're trying to speed someone's hands up, we're gonna pretend the ball is on fire. So I got to get that ball out of my hands as fastly as possible. So when we feel both ends of the spectrum, I feel really heavy, slow. I feel really fast, quick. Now, based on the situation or what I'm trying to get done, I can kind of find something in the middle that makes the most sense for the situation. Because I'm sure even in your experience, you have a play where you have to speed up your hands and you just gun it outside. Or maybe you've got a transition play and you really want to slow it down. You're going to maybe take a little bit more time, slow and a nice, comfortable up and down ball. So the more times we get to experience like those two ends, the more we can kind of assimilate it with the right situation, in my experience.
I like that. Yeah, that's one of the most frustrating parts about coaching that I think everybody goes through. And I think contrast training is such a good way to go about it because you go, no. When I tell you to set higher, I don't mean set a little bit higher. I want to see you chuck this
Yep.
next ball to the ceiling and hit the lights. And if you don't, then it's not higher. The frustrating part for coaches is these minuscule changes, but they never know how to articulate that. For players, like, how do I get them to make a gross change so that I don't have to keep saying the same thing a little bit faster, a little bit faster, a little bit faster? Like, make me say the opposite thing. I want you to make a change that's so big that at least proves to me that you
And I
understand
think
what
I
I'm talking
started trying to do that early in my coaching
about.
career, just like naturally. I was like, there's got to be a way to break through maybe this mental block or whatever is holding a player back or even myself. And now it kind of like put a science to it and it makes me more comfortable using it as a coaching tool. I mean, we have a drill that's called shatter. So you're trying to like shatter the ceiling above you, you're trying to like blow the ball through a glass roof. And then the contrast of that would be like wind ball. So it's really windy out. We're going to play super duper low. So we like to mix those in as like kind of situational sort of strategy and also technical. You're getting a different feel. So players are going to get a little bit different feel when they do that.
And even I got into, I won't call it an argument, but a discussion with my pro guys out here when I was going with like Logan and Hagen, and they're like, we keep passing for on two, we keep passing for on two. Like, I just, maybe this isn't a part of our offense. And I had to re-explain it and say, if you can pass where you want, whenever you want. That's the goal. It's not passing 4-on-2 and getting better at passing on two. It's always passing exactly where you want. So we're now doing drills where before the player passes, like we do a little free ball drill, before the player passes, your setter is allowed to run anywhere they want on the court so that you find them, pass there. It creates a couple more transition sets. So you get a bunch of like moving set work, but it's also, there are going to be so many different situations, so many different wins, so many different places where my like player might be that I'm going to have to lift the ball higher, or they're going to be sitting there. So, okay, now I can pass a little bit wall, or the wind's coming from the side. So now I have to shove it out to that antenna. And if you're only practicing to one spot, one distance the entire time, like you actually don't get better at that. Scientifically, you are not as good at that as if you try to pass to that location from 10 different spatial orientations, or if you try to pass in the same location to 10 different spots, you actually end up as the better passer than the guy that practiced the same
distance
the entire time. Because it's sport. It's not a
Blocked environment. So that's why I try to avoid block training as much as possible and do variable, like you're saying. So the more random, the more information we have to collect, and the more suited we'll be to, you know, play the best volleyball ever.
Cool. Well, so what are your plans for competing this year?
Oh, I don't have a partner yet, but having a lot of really good conversations. I'm getting into a lot of really good practices here in St. Pete. So hopefully I'll have a decision in the coming weeks. I have released one, I don't know, I guess news update. I am being sponsored by Slunks again this year. Really happy to be a part of the team Slunks again.
Nice.
They're awesome people. I'm sure everybody knows what Slunks is by now, but they've always been super awesome to me, their owner, Chris. So I'm really grateful for that. Also, they have the Better at Beach Slunks as well, and those look pretty cool. So stoked about that.
That's right. Betteratbeach.com/shop. If you guys are trying to get
but as far as other stuff on the horizon, I'm just trying to develop the pro group here. And I'm also trying to get involved running tournaments here. So I want to be the tournament people want to play here in Florida.
Nice. Good luck with that, man. That'll be good. And it takes a lot to be a tournament director. I think a lot of people try, but they don't understand what it takes to run a great tournament that finishes on time and makes
that's my goal happy,
while giving the sport the prestige it needs. Like, it's I've always said that like a good tournament director needs to be a real jerk just a couple of times. And I don't mean a jerk in like just be, you know, and I mean, you have to lay down the line at some point hard and say, no, you've lost the point, or no, you've forfeited the match because you didn't show up. And if you do that once or twice a season where you lay that hard line and everybody says, no, dude, he'll kick you out of the tournament, immediately the community upgrades and they show up, and then you can finish tournaments.
Totally. So a big goal of mine is expectations. So everybody should know what to expect when they get on the beach, and hopefully we'll run some awesome events. Hopefully you can make it to some.
Hell yeah. I'll come watch.
Awesome.
Mackenzie will play in some. Cool. Well, guys, this is JM. He coaches a lot of Better at Beach Camp. So if you want to hang out with him, I think we are trying to recruit him for the Asheville one in North Carolina in the middle of April. And he's going to be in Florida and St. Pete, April 6th to 12th. And we're going to get him to run a really small 10-person camp at our private Airbnb beach volleyball court in St. Pete. So just be on the lookout. If you're not on our email list, make sure that you click the link around this video or this podcast. And just for getting on our email list, we're going to send you 36 of our best beach volleyball drills, as well as several video analyses and my top tips for volleyball. So you'll be due for a lot of volleyball information in your inbox. And of course, our mailing list gets a first crack at everything, including our discounts. And
we're doing it,
JM. Dominican Republic. Dominican Republic is
that's amazing. I can't wait.
Booked.
I'm excited for
I
camp in a
know. I'm
couple weeks.
excited.
And
Oh, I'm
again, I'm
busy.
super grateful. Thanks for letting me come on to the pod. Always love chatting volley. So I should do this more.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, should. Cool. So
Cool.
you stay on for a little bit off air. So just give me a second. Don't hang up right away. But for everybody listening, thank you so much for listening. If you like the episode, go ahead and subscribe. Please share it with a friend. Check out JM Plummer on Instagram at Jam and JM Plummer. And follow him and follow his path as a ref, as a player, as a coach, starting his entrepreneurial stuff. And you can check out his practices in Florida. So from me, JM, and the whole Better at Beach
Thanks,
gang,
guys.
we'll see you on the sand.